I mean, the amount of pain that I was in back in 2015, I was ready to end it all. I mean, you're not sort of like wanting to commit suicide, but you're sort of thinking, well, it's that bad. What's the bloody point? Do you know what I mean? There seems to be absolutely no point to your life whatsoever. And I'm starting to cry now. But that's where you get. And it's really bad. But the cannabis, because it gets rid of the pain, it gives you a second chance. And I know so many other people that have said exactly the same as me. It's not a case of you not having the cannabis to kill you, but not having the cannabis would kill you, because eventually the too much pain gets too bad. I mean, complex regional is known as the suicide disease.
Time and time again, we hear personal testimonies from patients like Jane Hinchliffe about how cannabis can control their insufferable pain where conventional, standard medications have failed to do so. This is an interesting interview. Jane is a chronic pain patient. She's a medical cannabis patient with a prescription, but for quite a few years she was getting her cannabis from the legacy market, and can talk from personal experience how the legal prescription avenue compares with what is available from the illicit market. You're listening to Cannabis Voices. People's stories in their own words about the healing power of the cannabis plant.
Hi Jane, how are you today?
I am good, thanks. Good to meet you.
Yeah, lovely to meet you.
Yeah, how are you doing? You all right?
Thank you for asking. No one ever asked me. I'm good, thank you. Oh. I'm sweating a little bit because as long with the rest of Europe, we're in a bit of a heat wave, aren't we? I don't know, because you're in Yorkshire, right? Are you aware?
Yeah,
about...
it's cloudy today. It's quite cool.
Right.
I have all the windows closed.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the sun goes in, it cools right down.
Yeah. So it is unusual for us to be baking, I think, like this. But anyway, you know, we enjoy it while we've got it. Yeah. So I really wanted to chat to you because I've seen... You know, you're quite active on Twitter and just sort of sharing your experiences as a medical cannabis patient. So just wanted to kick off, really. I mean, just tell me a little bit about yourself. You know, what are you taking cannabis for? How did you get on this journey of trying the plant? And yeah, how have you got to where we are today?
Well, I suppose it's quite a long story, really. Because I mean, it all started, I suppose, when I was 13. I stood up one day, my knee started to hurt, and the doctors, they didn't really know what it was, growing pains. Then I got to be told, and like, oh, it's arthritis, and arthritis ran in the family, so they basically just went with the closest assumption. Then I got to 26 and I moved area, and they diagnosed me with fibromyalgia. They basically said, oh, it's so obvious, I don't know why they didn't spot it. So at 26, I basically developed every single symptom of fibromyalgia, including the ME, the tiredness, the chronic fatigue and everything. Let's see, carried on like that. I mean, I've always used cannabis. So at the age of about 18, I used it what I thought was recreationally. I suppose I was always using it for pain. But yeah, I've basically got older. I've had a few more health conditions. I had meningitis in 2013, lost the hearing in my left ear. So I don't know why I've got an earplug in that ear. It seems pointless. I lost the hearing in my left ear 2013. Then 2014, because of losing the hearing in my left ear, I fell off my bike and injured my knee quite badly. And I picked up an autoimmune disease called complex regional pain syndrome, which is actually the most painful disease known to man. So the McGill pain scale is how nurses and doctors rate pain. And it goes from 0 to 50. Now your average fracture is about 15. Fibromyalgia, I believe, is about 19, 20, same around that for cancer. Mine can score 43 to 45.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Do you ever pass out with the pain? Because that's like serious levels.
No, I have been blue lighted to hospital. So in 2018, it was the summer of 2018. This was when I'd started researching cannabis properly. I was blue lighted to the hospital around the June time, I think it was, because the pain had got so bad. I mean, the ambulance crew came out and they're looking at me. I'm sat there smoking a joint, you know, I'm like, need pain relief. And they're looking at me, you know, like, oh, it's a waste of time coming here. And then, of course, they strapped me up and they found my heartbeat. And they're like, right, blue light hospital. Then, you know, they're trying to get morphine into me and they couldn't get it in. So they just gave me a bottle of oral morphine, gave me a load, got me out of pain and sent me home on a bus. Do you know what I mean?
Goodness. Yeah.
That June, I had read that Mike Barnes's paper about the cannabis. And I mean, I was a Facebooker, and that was when I took to Twitter after I read that, because it was, I mean, I've been on opiates since I was 15, because the doctors prescribed me coproximal at 15. They prescribed me the full dosage just to give me something for pain, because I'd had ibuprofen at 13 and it wasn't working anymore. So do you know what I mean? They had me on a lot of these painkillers, and then I found out that I should have been on cannabis all my life, really, if people had just, you know, just listened to other people and not been interested in pharmaceutical money, which is what I think it all comes down to. But yeah, so I read this paper and I took to Twitter to basically scream and shout, you know, why isn't this available? Why aren't people listening? I actually fell into a bit of a WhatsApp group with Karen Gray and another lady called Kat Scott. Her son's gone blind because there's no access to cannabis. His condition could actually be reversed. Well, I don't think it can be reversed now, but it could have been prevented from getting so bad to go blind with cannabis. It's called
glaucoma, probably.
Retinal pygmosis. Oh,
okay.
Quite rare RP. But yeah, so I fell in with her and Eddie's mum, the other epilepsy boy. And there was a few others in the group as well. Stacey, she's another campaigner that lives locally. She's quite a good friend. And I got quite friendly with Stacey, and she invited me to the Brighton Green Pride. Now, I was in a wheelchair at this point in 2018. I was on a lot of painkillers. I mean, I was on amitriptyline. I'd been on pregabalin, but I'd come off those because I went up to 18 stone at one point. I was absolutely huge. Lost it all, thank God. So, yeah, amitriptyline, Brutrans patch, codeine on top. Not ibuprofen. It was celecoxib because my stomach was bad from all the other stuff. Then you have to have lansoprazole to protect your stomach from all the other stuff. Then you need Laxido to make you go to the toilet because you're on so much opiates that you can't go to the toilet. And then, you know, there's all the other issues that comes with all of that. I went down there and I'd saved some of this bottle of Oromorph that the hospital had given me, because I knew I was going to be in a lot of pain because it was a train ride with my wheelchair on my own, having to get the staff to move me from station to station, place to place. Yeah, well, I got there and I bought some space cakes. Well, I had one of these space cakes and I didn't need the oral morphine. I mean, I took a few home with me as well. I actually chucked a bit of a whitey in the train station on my way home because I'd eaten a full cake and I really shouldn't have done. I was out to practice with them. But yeah, I was all right. I survived. So I took these cakes home and I mean, without eating another cake the next day, I didn't need my codeine. And the day after that, I didn't need my codeine. So I basically I made these cakes last me and I just had little bits and I found that it was really working. So I looked into sourcing some RSO, basically cannabis oil, strong cannabis oil. And I went to my GP and told him what I was thinking of doing. And I asked him to swap my Brutrans patch for codeine tablets so that I could reduce myself. And it was a bit reluctant because, you know, he says, well, he's a bit, but he went along with it because I think he understood about cannabis. And I mean, I'm speaking to a few friends, he has actually recommended cannabis to them as well. So I think he's not totally stupid, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, he put me onto the tablets and I sourced the RSO. And I took the RSO and the pain went away. It was amazing. Then I took the codeine and the pain came back.
That's interesting. So the codeine was making the pain worse.
Well, this was why I started. I mean, I'd been going to the doctor and asking for more pain relief. I need more pain relief. I'm in so much pain. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I was housebound in a wheelchair. I was, you know, I just couldn't do anything. I couldn't concentrate even to watch TV. That's how bad the pain was. You could watch it, but you weren't really taking anything in. I mean, my ex-boyfriend said it was like living with somebody with mild dementia because I'd lose conversations and I never knew where I was at.
Well, and also the side effects. If you're on opiates, that's also going to affect your cognitive function, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. You can't learn. You can't think straight. You're also not interested in learning anything. You're a bit like a vegetabilized zombie that just sort of does stuff. You sort of look as though you're getting on with life, but you're not really. You're just there. Yeah. It's it's not a good way to live. But where was I? I'll lose my train of thought if I'm not careful. So like I said, I had the RSO, the codeine then brought the pain back. So my solution to that was to cold turkey, basically, because I thought, well, the solution to this is just take more RSO. I started decarbing weed and putting it into chocolate so that I could eat it, just as another way of getting more cannabis into me. And I basically found that as long as I had enough RSO, enough cannabis and some high strength vape juice, I managed it. And I've had 5 weeks of feeling very, very, very ropey. But I wasn't going to, I wasn't dying. And I, you know, I couldn't regulate my temperature. I was getting about 3 hours sleep a night. But I was using
this the withdrawals, you think? From
Yeah, it was withdrawals. Yeah. It was massive opiate withdrawals. Yeah. It was really bad opiate withdrawals. Probably the worst I've ever had. And yeah, it was, like I say, it took 5 weeks to fully come out of my system. And I find that quite gobsmacking, personally. I just don't know. I just find it's a bit strange. Because I mean, I suppose it's going to come out eventually because people, some people know. But I used to be on heroin, basically. And obviously, I've done a heroin withdrawal. Now, I've done a cold turkey heroin withdrawal. 7 days later, you feel fine. You feel peachy and you're ready to go. As long as you do it cold turkey. If you start introducing other opiates, then, you know, you're just making yourself worse. But 7 days, clean, and you feel great. So what are they putting in that stuff that it took 5 weeks for me to feel better? Do you know what I mean? But yeah, after 5 weeks, I got it all out of my system. And, yeah, it was a lot better. So, and I've been using the cannabis since. Let's see. So it was, it's been 2 years now I've had my prescription. But yeah, I was doing all this illegally.
Well, as everybody was, right? I mean, you
just
know,
just as it was coming on to prescription, it was the November 2018, September to November that I was coming off it.
So yeah. what were your thoughts then when you, could see all these changes happening? And, you know, it was first of all the reclassification, rescheduling, and then, you know.
Well, at first I was a little bit naive. I mean, I'd just come off opiates, so my brain was starting to wake up and I was finding out little bits about cannabis world, but I didn't realise just how bad it was. So I thought, it's coming on prescription, I'll have an NHS prescription. I've got a consultant that's willing to write this prescription because he's seen me come off all these opiates and he thinks, I mean, I've got a report from a consultant within the NHS stating that he thinks it's amazing that the, you know, the progress I've made and coming off all the pharmaceuticals and he wants to prescribe. That was November 2018. And I was very naive thinking that it was going to happen. Since then, obviously, learned the real world.
I am interested to know your experience of moving from, you know, the illicit market and you know, your RSO oil and you know, edibles and all the rest of it. How has it been entering the legal market? So just to kind of, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, so in the UK, essentially it's a private sector. So there's a whole band of private clinics. And at the moment it's doctors on the specialist register who can prescribe medicinal cannabis. Then there can be a kind of shared care after that point where a GP can do follow-on prescriptions. Jane, yeah, they can.
But since
can.
When?
Since ages ago.
A private GP, though, not a GP.
Well, there's nobody within the NHS who would do. So it's
not really a GP. When you say GP, people think, oh, I can pop down my doctor's note.
No. It's all still private. But it, you know,
I'm autistic, so very literal. You've got.
don't worry, it's fine. So it means then that apart from three children who have prescriptions, and that hasn't changed pretty much since the law change, three children have prescriptions through our National Health Service, and everybody else, which I think is about 17,000. I think they've been, I don't know if it's 17,000 patients or 17,000 prescriptions. Everyone else is through the private sector, you know, through these private clinics. So, Jane, what has been your experience of that?
Well, I didn't join to start with. A couple of my friends were, well, one of my friends was the first on the project, Kayleigh Ross, and another of my friends joined quite early on.
Do you mean Project 2021? Or
Yeah, Project 2021. Okay. Oh, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mention. Yeah, I'm on Project 2021, you see.
Okay.
Well, Yeah, so they were the first ones to get on the project.
Right. So just to kind of, so Project 2021 is it's an initiative by Drug Science that patients have kind of discounted the prices. It's you get sort of cheaper weed. Exactly. And then the data is collected, and it's in this idea of collecting real world evidence, basically. So you're on Project 2021.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with the medical cannabis clinics. Yeah. I think they were the main ones that were doing it. And I mean, to start with, I didn't bother. My friend was on it, and she was like, "Oh, it's great. There's this bowl strain." And obviously, at the time, I mean, I'd been using the illicit market for so long, I had quite good connections, and I could get everything I needed at the time. So I thought, well, you know, I like more than one strain, because yeah, I've got more than one problem. So do you know what I mean?
What's your kind of go-to that you know works for your complex needs, basically? What sort of
one that works for everything is dog.
Okay.
Guava dog particularly, but anything with a bit of dog in it. It's the high peppery terpene. Which one's that? I can never remember the blooming names of them, but it's that peppery terpene.
Are they beta carophyllin or
yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah, so that activates your CB2 receptor, so it's anti-inflammatory. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's also anti-anxiety, I've found. Okay. Something in the dog gets rid of anxiety for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really good. See, I didn't finish telling you about the medical thing, because I've only recently just found this out. So I haven't actually ever had fibromyalgia, although I've had every single symptom of it. I've actually got a functional neurological disorder, which is basically brought on by, it's caused by chronic stress complex PTSD. And obviously with having problems from childhood and, you know, stresses and what have you, it changes your brain chemistry. And you can no longer deal with stress. And yeah, basically, I gave myself fibromyalgia because they told me I had it. I get frozen shoulder, but I mean, when I was going in the gym, I could lift all my weights, but I couldn't lift my drink to my mouth. I couldn't do that, but I could do everything else. It's really, really strange condition. So I give myself muscle spasms to the point that my physio, and I mean, I've been seeing a private physio, he's very cheap, otherwise I couldn't afford him. And I go for massages. And I'm seeing him for the best part of 2 years, and he thought I had MS. He literally thought I had MS because the spasms were that bad. I had spasticity.
Wow, and it was okay, me. Goodness, yeah.
It's me causing it. It's anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely mad.
That's mind-body connection, isn't it? So if you, when you have a strain that relaxes your mind essentially and helps with the anxiety, then I guess, does that have the knock-on effect of
because it's my mind that because my mind causes the spasms. If I get over tense, it's like I've been living in fight or flight for 30 years, I've basically discovered. And I've also just started doing this course about adverse childhood experiences. Mm-hmm. And I was reading about what fight or flight does to the body and how it works. And you basically, when you start to experience a trauma, your brain activates and puts you into hyper-aware state. And then it releases more adrenaline if the threat is still there, and cortisol. And you're basically into an even more hyper-aware state. And you're not released from that state until you believe that the threat has gone. Now, because I've not been aware of what was wrong with me for the best part of 30 years, I think I've literally been living in that state until about a year ago, when it sort of dawned on me what was going on. And I mean, it was my partner that helped a lot. I mean, he helped me to learn to relax. He helped me. I mean, lockdown probably saved me, because I was going to the gym, and I mean, I've got OCD, and I didn't even know that I had OCD. But yeah, I was going into the gym, and I started doing 3 to 4 hours in the gym, including about an hour of stretching and rollering, and then going downstairs for a swim and steam and sauna, sitting. So I was spending 6 hours a day at the health club. Do you know what I mean? And so yeah, when lockdown happened, as much as I found it really painful, because obviously I thought that going in the gym was helping me, because while I was in the gym, I wasn't anxious, therefore I wasn't in pain. But then as soon as I got home, I was in absolute agony, because for some reason back then, being at home, I was very anxious. Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm not so much now, but it's been a case of finding a safe space, learning to give yourself a safe space. Mm. And then also understanding that everywhere can be a safe space if you just let it be. And it's just been a case of letting my body come back down from those years of stress. And, you know, it's releasing those happy chemicals that bring your body back down after stress. And I don't think my body has released them properly for donkey's years. Mm. Oh. So I've just been living up. I used to always say, I run on adrenaline, I live on adrenaline. And I used to think it was great.
But then you crash. You can't always run on adrenaline. So how does cannabis help with all this then, Jane? How would you say?
Well, to start with, obviously it was pain relief because I had the complex regional, the most painful condition known to man. I was just in absolute agony and I couldn't walk properly because it was so painful. So the cannabis helped me get to a point where I could exercise because it was relieving the pain enough. Then I learned that very, very high doses of THC actually put autoimmune diseases into remission. So I've just basically started really high dosing with RSO and FECO and put this complex regional and my asthma and any other autoimmune I might have, but I think those are the only two that I've got, into remission. Wow, okay. So the complex regional pain, I haven't really felt much apart from when I was in prison. I haven't mentioned yet that I've been to prison, have I? Got done for growing, didn't I?
More than once.
But yeah, yeah. So I've had a suspended and then they caught me again. But I mean, I was selling to a few friends to pay for the stuff I was buying in. And they assumed that I was going to sell everything. And it's like, well, no, that was going to be for me. So I didn't have to keep selling. But you've messed that up, haven't you? So yeah, 46 days in prison. But my autoimmunes came out of remission. My complex regional started to spread again. And I had asthma attacks again. Do you know what I mean? So, I basically treated the pain with high doses of RSO.
Well, I mean, also your cannabinoids are immunoregulating, right? I mean, they're kind of anti-inflammatory generally, which is, you know, sort of dampening down the immune system. So,
See, and then obviously recently I've started getting menopausal, perimenopausal, whatever you want to call it. I decided to have a tolerance break off the THC just to basically try and get stoned a little bit again, because you know you start using more and more and it's not cost effective. So I thought, right, because I do use quite a bit of CBD. I've been using the paste, the oils. I mean, when I first started with this cannabis journey, it started with CBD on top of my pharmaceutical stuff, and it worked really well. And I mean, I managed to drop cocodamol just using CBD oil. You know what I mean? And that was years ago. I stopped all my THC and just used CBD flower, CBD oil, and absolutely loads of gummies and basically any CBD I could put in my body. What I actually found was that my spasms got a lot better, and my anxiety sort of went a lot. And so I'm not sure if the THC was giving mild anxiety. I think it was contributing a bit. So I found that high CBD sometimes works better, but I also wasn't sleeping and I wasn't eating without THC.
So I'm quite interested to know, how does the quality compare between what you were getting before and what's been available legally?
I'm guessing that you've seen all the issues then, haven't you? Well, the thing for me was that I started getting police problems again, basically. I mean, I was able to get hold of the types of strains that were working well for me, and then the police decided to raid me and put a marker on my car, and I could no longer travel all the way from Hull to Doncaster to obtain the one strain that worked for me that I could guarantee would work. So basically that was what sort of pushed me into going legal, because I couldn't obtain the strains I needed locally. Everything that was around locally wasn't working for me. It was beautiful weed, really well grown and all that, but if it gave me anxiety or just didn't kill my pain, it was no good for me. So I went legal. I mean, what I've found is that some of the strains are really good. They're really good quality, but they've been irradiated. So you do lose some of the terpenes and they don't smell as strong. But medically, they work really well. I mean, I can still obtain street weed easily. It's not a hard thing to do in the UK, really, is it? And I can get it at cheaper prices than a lot of the prescription stuff. But It won't work for me. It's the wrong strains. It's just not going to do what I need it to do. I'll have to travel for what I want. Then I risk getting arrested again. So do you know what I mean? It's just the consistency of having something that you know is going to work medically for you. And that's all it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, oh, it stinks. Oh, this is going to get me mashed. It's, does this kill my pain? Does this cure my anxiety? Mm. And if it's a yes or a no, then do you know what I mean? Yeah, I've had some of the moldy stuff. I did have that and I got a refund on it, thank God. I had some of the packets with bits in and I managed to send them back and I got my refund. I mean, everybody's like, oh, it shouldn't happen, blah, blah, blah. But I did a bit of Googling. It happens all over the world. It's a botanical product. Mm. So apparently it is quite common. So I don't know. It's one of those things, mm. I suppose. I mean, the new company, Grow Pharma, they've had mold. Noidex has had mold. I don't know. Has anybody else had mold? It's just one of those things. But overall,
I mean, they talk about kind of supply chain issues. So have you had to change from one strain to another because for whatever reason that, you know?
Yeah, that is one issue. Because I mean, one strain that worked perfectly for me was Shishka Berry. It was low THC. It was 14 THC, but it was non-irradiated as well. And that worked perfectly for me. Now, before I had my FND diagnosis. So I was using this Shishka Berry and I'm like, oh, it's really relaxing my neck. Why does this one relax my neck? And why does that one relax this? And why, do you know what I mean? I was trying to understand it. And I suppose the reason that relaxed my neck was because that's my place where I get tense when I'm anxious first. And because the Shishka Berry works so well for my anxiety, it relaxed my neck. Mm. But yeah, there's the stock issues, but I suppose there's also the bonus of the fact that you're rotating strains. Some people don't like that. I do, as long as there's something that I like. I'm a bit disappointed that they haven't got the 1010 anymore, the balanced strain. But I found the Noidex T5C7. That's a good replacement. It's called the Balanced Kush. Mm-hmm. And it's just really relaxing when you have it. It's, and a lot of people say, oh, it's not enough THC. I mean, I was a stoner. I mean, I was a true stoner. So they can't say not enough THC if I'm enjoying it and it's working for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really relaxing. Mm-hmm. So it's not a case of being stoned. It's a case of just that. And I've run out of it. I've had an appointment this morning with the doctor and I've put in another prescription for it. So yeah, he's doing
and
me.
How does it work out kind of, you know, price-wise? Obviously, you're with C21, which is going to be less expensive than ordinarily would be.
It works out at £150 for 30 grams on average. I mean, there was one month when it was my birthday and my boyfriend trekked me to some Althea, which is that one. And I still got some of it left because I wasn't that keen on it, to be quite honest. But yeah, that was a bit more expensive. That was over 200, I think. But yeah, I mean, £150 for 30 grams, I don't think is too bad. Most people can't obtain it at that price on the street. Most people are paying well over that price, as far as I'm aware. So it is a good price for what you're getting. So I mean, there's no complaints, but obviously the amount that I'm having to get, it has got quite pricey. And I mean, I did work out about a few months ago that I've spent like a deposit for a house on prescription
medicine.
Cannabis.
Yeah. On prescription. Wow. Okay. So in the time that
I've been on prescription, I've spent a good sized deposit for a house. And I mean, me and my boyfriend, we would like to buy a house.
Yeah.
But we can't because I've got to be legal because I can't grow my own. I mean, I got caught growing hemp in my garden the other year. It was during lockdown. It was part of the Seed Our Future protest. And they were scattering seeds everywhere. And I was scattering seeds everywhere. None of them seemed to be growing. So I put some in my garden to make sure they grew. I mean, the police came and took 42 of them. They left me a couple. They always leave you a couple. I don't know what it is. But yeah, they left me a couple of the hemp plants. But there was a couple of actual cannabis plants as well. I don't know if they spotted them or not. They were in pots. They were just little vortas. I mean, there was one that was, it was nearly ready. It was that size and it was fully mature, starting to bud. Do you know what I mean? I'm absolutely no professional at that. But do you know what I mean? It was mine. It would have been mine. I mean, you should be able to grow this stuff. It's not just a case of getting it on the NHS. It's a case of we should all be able to grow it.
Yeah.
And have it for free. I mean, we could grow it in our gardens at the right time of year. And that's the frustrating part, is that it's costing me so much when all I really need to do is just get myself a hobby, like my doctor keeps telling me, and start growing some vegetables, because at the end of the day, it is a vegetable. Well, isn't it? It's a vegetable. Yeah. People say it's a herb, but it's not. It's a vegetable because you can use every part of the plant.
So, Jane, so you obviously you've had, you know, some difficulties, shall we say, with the police over the years. How has that improved now that you have legal access, or do you still give you a bit of bother?
When I first started, when I first got my prescription, I was on a Gramadier, and I was still buying it illegally. And that was when the police came and did me for the hemp in the garden, had my door put through. And I had an ounce of illegal weed because I'd literally run out of my prescription. So there was an empty prescription packet on the floor, an ounce of cannabis. And, you know, they arrested me and all that. Obviously, the hemp in the garden didn't help. And the thing is, when I showed them the packet and I said, well, you know, what would you have done if it had been that? They said, oh, we'd have taken it away for testing. And I was like, testing for what? Because all they can do is find out if it's got THC in it or not. Yeah, and it says only 20% THC. And it's like, oh, my word. Since then, I had the door put through then. And then I got pulled coming back from Doncaster with a bit of dog had that took off me. But since then, I'm under investigation, but nothing's happened. They've not bothered me. I have had a home invasion because the door had been put through. Three 15-year-old lads decided to kick my door in, come in with a hatchet, a hammer and a spanner, demanding my cannabis.
Oh, my God.
And luckily, my boyfriend was home, so he kicked two of them down the stairs. I held the other one off the golf club. But, they got away with nothing. Mm. But it's, do you know what I mean? And, I mean, I called the police, and the police came, and they were really good, to be quite honest with you. Because, I've heard of some cannabis patients calling the police and then being arrested themselves because they've got cannabis in the house. But, no, the police were really good. They came in, they took photos, they took away a hatchet, they tried to get blood samples and stuff, but nothing's really coming of it. They had masks, you know, they had the things on covering the
face. Frightening, wow. So when you're out and about and you're presumably, you know, let's say going to the supermarket or going into town or whatever, so you know you have a legal prescription, you as anyone, you know, can take a paracetamol or cocodamol or whatever, you are within your legal right to self-medicate, right?
I just do it. I mean I've always used cannabis, so I mean even when I was using cannabis illegally, I was still at the bus stop smoking a joint. You know what I mean? It was, there was places I wouldn't do it. You know, you'd go to a quiet corner, you'd make sure that you're at a quiet bus stop. Mm-hmm. But I would still stand at the bus stop smoking a joint. So for me, being legal is basically just means that if the police came along, I can be like, bye. You know, you can't do anything to me now.
Well, I wanted to speak to you about, because there is, you know, there's still this huge stigma, and the police aren't necessarily up to speed, right?
I suppose I'm lucky in the fact that the Humberside Police now have it well on record that I've got a cannabis prescription. So I suppose if they came along and they wanted to check, it's easy for them to radio through and be like, yeah, she has. So I'm not too worried. But obviously, yeah, I do know that a lot of police forces, you'll show them a tub and you'll show them like the label, and they'll be like, well, that could be forged. And it's like, have you got a CAN card? I mean, this is experience from other people I've heard. Have you got a CAN card? And I'm like, well, no, I've got a prescription. I don't need a CAN card. Or you need a CAN card if you've got a prescription. I can't remember which police force this was. I mean, crikey, I was on Reddit months and months ago, and there was a post from a police officer in the medical cannabis group. I do not feel like I have been given enough information by my employers in order to do my duties. Could the medical cannabis community please educate me as to what to look for in a medical cannabis prescription? I mean, this was a long time ago. This was months and months. I've kept away from it. I can't be bothered with it. It's just, it's a bit hard work.
So this is work that the industry needs to be doing then, presumably, because just for people that don't know CAN card, it's a card that people who don't have a prescription but use cannabis medicinally can show, that proves that they have a medical condition for which they are using cannabis, but this is not the same. These are people who you do yeah. not, for whatever reason, have a medical cannabis prescription. Yeah. So it's you know, for you or any other patient who has a prescription, they're not going to have a CAN card. But presumably probably, then...
Well, the CAN card isn't actually endorsed by the Home Office.
No.
So it's down to each individual police force as to whether or not they're going to pay attention to a CAN card.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you know what I mean? It's a bit...
Well, it's trying to make the best of a bad situation, isn't it? Yeah. You know, I know it's helped
you know, a lot of people.
It's helped a lot of people. And I know I've heard sort of, you know, I know Carly Barton, who started CAN card, she'd much rather there wasn't the need, so CAN card didn't have to exist. So,
exactly.
You know, so it's trying to at least do something to protect vulnerable patients.
I've got friends that use cannabis medically and they can't afford a prescription. I mean, I went down to the local pub the other night. They had a band on. Now, normally, if I wanted to go and see, I mean, a couple of months ago, I went to see a band in the local club. Now, I did not know my rights at the time, and CDR Future had done a document. But I didn't know that you can legally vape in any venue if you've got a prescription. So I ended up actually having a drink that night, and I haven't drunk in years to quell my social anxiety, calm my nerves before the band came on and distracted me again. I should have been vaping my weed. So this night I went to my local pub, Red Hawk. I had a nice meal by myself. My partner works in the kitchen there. So I just went in by myself, sat and had a meal. And I sat in the corner listening to the band playing and talking on my vape. And they were absolutely fine. Nobody even noticed, I don't think. People weren't looking, people weren't staring. I don't think it smells because the prescription flower has been irradiated. Mm-hmm. It doesn't smell that much.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as people will be like, oh, am I okay doing it in public? Oh, am I okay doing it? I think you're perfectly fine doing it. So anybody that's got a bit of anxiety about going down the pub and doing it after a meal, just as long as you let the staff know,
yeah,
that you're going, it's just, I just went in and I said to the, all I did, I went up to the bar and I ordered my meal and my coffee because I don't drink. And I just said to the member of staff, I said, who's the most senior in charge today? And he said, well, it's me and then this lady. And I just passed him the CDR Future documents and I just said, just to let you know, I've only just found this out myself, so I'm just making you aware. But after my meal, I'll be stopping to watch the band. And if I need to medicate, I will be doing so.
Mm.
And he was like, yeah, it's fine, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was a Mansfield pub. Now,
right.
Apparently, the Mansfield pubs have said in. That's my friend sent me the bloody article. He says, oh, I've read somewhere in some article that Wetherspoons and blah, blah, blah are refusing it. And Mansfield was mentioned. So apparently, it's down to the landlord's discretion, but it's not.
We can include in the show notes the CDR Future document, yeah, so that people can, you know, have a look and use, yeah, it as needs be. I did read that you've had a few, because you know, you mentioned that you like going to the gym and going to your health club, etc. So yeah, what's happened there?
I've been going to this gym since 2019, April 2019. I managed to get my motability car finally after 5 years of challenging and tribunals and what have you. I managed to get my car. And I started going down to the gym and going in the pool, what have you. So, yeah, and it's been a gradual 4 years of making myself better. And then, you know, you get chatting to people. I mean, over the period of that time, they've been well aware that I was going out to the car and doing bongs and going back in. You know what I mean? I was doing cannabis lollies in the steam room and I stank the place out. And they were like, oh, can you not do that in there, Jane? Oh, people are complaining. And this was when it was totally illegal. I had no prescription. They were fine with it. They had no issue whatsoever. And do you know what I mean? It was fine and everybody was fine with it because they saw me getting better, they saw me exercising, nobody had an issue with it. Since I had my prescription, they've been fine with it. I mean, I've sat out in the courtyard and had a bowl of soup and sat outside and vaped because obviously I didn't know I could do it inside, and so I did get a bit cold sitting outside and vaping. But hey ho. And then, you know, I mean, obviously people chat with you in the steam and sauna and they ask how you look so good. And obviously, I'm like, well, it's down to my cannabis prescription. It's like, you know, I started coming to the gym because it eased the pain and blah, blah, blah. You get onto it. And so I spend a lot of the time in the gym talking about my cannabis prescription because people ask me. So, I got an email last week stating that they wouldn't be renewing my membership and good luck with my move. And I was messaging them like, well, I'm not moving yet. And then my anxiety, I had to find out straight away. Sorry, thirsty. I'd found out straight away, because my anxiety, I'm spasming and I'm tensing up. So I ended up calling to find out. And she says to me on the phone, she says, oh, it's complaints from other members. Members are sorry, but people are complaining about you talking about your cannabis prescription. And the thing that, you know, that people are complaining about it. And I'm like, most people are asking me about it. Do you know what I mean? Most people seem interested about it. And then she said something about me complaining to one of the members of staff about another member of staff. And I was like, yes, I did complain about a member of staff. She's lazy. The steam and sauna aren't working properly. You ask her to come and check them and she refuses. So yes, I did complain about her. she basically said that it's complaints from other members. But I don't know. I think it's just a bit coincidental that they've also found out that if I wanted to, I could legally vape inside the building. I think they're preempting winter. And I think that they've kicked me out now so that they can preempt the fact that if I wanted to vape in winter, then it would be definite grounds for discrimination. Mm. But they're refusing to put in writing while they've made me leave. I've got it off the phone, but I didn't record the phone call. Obviously, if I tried calling up again, I mean, if I recorded it, it's not admissible and, you know, you can get into trouble for privacy and all that type of stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, they basically used their Section 7 clause, which is we reserve the right to terminate any membership for no reason whatsoever because we're toffs, basically. Mm-hmm. My parents were paying for the membership for me. it's disappointing because I think that most people there were quite on board with the fact that I use cannabis. I mean, I'm friends with a lot of them and some of them buy CBD off me. I mean, my partner's invested in a CBD franchise. Because obviously with me using so much and we've been, you know, I'm helping promote it. And so, yeah, down there talking about CBD and, you know, it's just frustrating because I think most people were interested. There was probably the odd couple sat in the corner, not saying a word, but that's like me being sat in there when they're talking about Gogglebox. I don't want to listen to it, but I can't get your band over it either. I can just leave the room or I can say, oh, could you please not talk about that? I'm getting bored with it now.
I guess what it highlights, Jane, is the huge stigma that there is still.
There's a huge stigma within the cannabis community, I think, a little bit. I mean, there's some people that have complained about the fact that I was vaping inside the pub and said, well, why can't you just go outside to do it? And apart from the fact that I was listening to the band and that was what I went there for, which would have defeated the object, it's cold outside of a night. Mm. And the cold makes me tense up. Tensing up gives me spasms.
Mm.
So it's like, well, if it was an inhaler, if it was oxygen, if it was insulin, would you make me go outside to do it?
Mm.
Well, then people need to understand that cannabis isn't a drug. It's not a recreational thing. It's not cigarettes. It's not alcohol. It's a medicine. And it's just so frustrating that people can't get that through their heads, and including the people in the cannabis community that are sort of saying, yes, it's a medicine, but if you need it, I mean, if somebody's having a fit in the middle of the supermarket, you're going to go and give them a vape, or you're going to put some RSO or, you know, the cannabis oil under the tongue.
I mean, yeah. where do you hope things will be sort of within 5 years, Jane? What's your, well, how do you, as a patient and...
As a patient and as a recreational user, because I sort of do like to, there is a recreational use there, and occasionally I would want to basically get together with a few friends and try a few different strains and just, you know, just chill and chat, because you start thinking, you start chatting about all sorts of really interesting stuff. And so I would like to still be able to do that. So ideally for me, in 5 years' time, I would like to see cannabis cafes open in the UK. I mean, there are some, but they're obviously still very illicit, or like prescription users can go there, or they keep getting raided, or I don't know. I've not really followed the cannabis cafe scene much in the UK. But I think that is where I'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it will be. I mean, home grow is essential as well, because this, I mean, I think it was Jonathan Nadler. I mean, I'm on the Life Group Patient Representative Board. And Jonathan Nadler, when he was at Cannabis Europa, actually stated that he thinks that patients should be allowed to home grow. And I think he actually said that, I'm not sure if it was him, but somebody else said that the prescription, cannabis prescriptions, is financially unsustainable in the UK because of the way it currently is. And it is, it's financially unsustainable. I just, you know, I mean, last month I didn't get as much, which was lucky, because of reducing the THC. I'd been buying CBD flower, mm-hmm. and it is a lot of CBD that I'm using now. But the cost, I mean, how on earth are these families affording £2,000 a month?
Well, with great sacrifice, isn't it?
Exactly, mm-hmm. and with help from other people. But when are the other people that are happy to donate money going to be happy to start lobbying and take to Parliament with us and be like, come on, we need this legalised. Mm, we don't want just NHS access, because the NHS is not going to happen, I don't think. We need it decriminalised so that the community growers can start growing and can start helping patients, because that's what they want to do. As much as people are like, oh, it's growers, it's dealers, it's... No. It's people that grow a medicine, and it's people that are trying to help patients. Yeah, there are some dealers that are just selling weed, but there are also some dealers that are actually trying to help people. And do you know what I mean? It's those that we need to be basically allowing to flourish.
Yeah,
a bit like America went, and, you know, start with, you know, the underground communities and then the pharmacies and what have you, dispensaries.
So before we finish, Jane, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Do you know, I can't remember what we discussed. We discussed so many things.
Well, where do you think if cannabis, where do you think you'd be if cannabis hadn't come into your life as a medicine?
Probably dead, to be quite honest with you. I mean, the amount of pain that I was in back in 2015, I was ready to end it all. I mean, you're not sort of like wanting to commit suicide, but you're sort of thinking, well, it's that bad, what's the bloody point? Do you know what I mean? There seems to be absolutely no point to your life whatsoever, and I'm starting to cry now. But that's where you get. And it's really bad, but the cannabis, because it gets rid of the pain, it gives you a second chance. And I know so many other people that have said exactly the same as me.
Mm.
It's not a case of, you know, not having the cannabis to kill you, but not having the cannabis would kill you. Because eventually, the too much pain gets too bad. I mean, complex regionally is known as the suicide disease. Yeah, I think cannabis has definitely saved my life. And yeah, I don't know where I'd be without it. Well, apart from probably back in a wheelchair, like happened when I went to prison. Do you know what I mean? I'd got out of a wheelchair temporarily between the April and the June, and then the June I went to prison and back in a wheelchair because I just couldn't walk far.
Mm.
It was too bad.
I mean, you can't argue with that, can you? From, you know, not being in a wheelchair anymore and being able to go to the gym and do everything that you're doing. So.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I had to do it without shoes, though, because I still can't wear shoes. I've got disturbing in my feet, and it's just so painful that I just don't wear shoes.
That's right. You save on trainers.
I do actually save a fortune on shoes. I had to put some on in the gym, but yeah, I can't go far with shoes on because it's so painful.
Well, listen, it's been lovely chatting to you today.
Yeah, you too.
And good to hear of your fighting spirit, and may it long continue.
I think that that's the autism. We don't like to give up. We're very stubborn.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you for listening to Cannabis Voices. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share with your family and friends.